Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Daniel Horowitz joins us to unpack the speaker's race. And then why are athletes continually dropping suddenly? Dropping. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast by opening up your podcast app and typing in Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter or a college chapter at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Congresswoman Greene, welcome to the program. So I want to ask you, you know, we've been receiving a lot of emails over the weekend about this deal that was negotiated and the deal that was struck. I believe it's a good deal. I believe that our friends that were the holdouts, they pushed it to the limit, and then they realized that the moderates were getting ready to strike back, and they still might strike back on the rules vote. Congresswoman, tell us about this deal, and tell us about how we are on pace to have the most conservative Congress of our lifetime.
Well, you know, I've been upfront all along. I always love a good fight in our conference, and I'm never afraid of one, but I always want it to be for the right thing. So I am thankful to my friends and colleagues because there's a few things I like in the package. But to be honest with you, they were pretty much already there before last week, before people saw what happened on the House floor. But for the American people to see it happen, I think that was helpful. It brought the dialogue and the conversations and the agreements that we had made weeks and months before inside our conference meetings, and it brought it out for the public view. So I think that was very helpful, and I'm very glad that happened. I'm excited that we're going to have 12 separate appropriation bills. I think that's a huge win. But that was, again, that was already there before the big fight happened. Now, the only change that truly happened with them holding out after 15 rounds was the motion to vacate went from 5 members down to 1 member. But today we have Anthony Gonzalez from Texas saying that is a no-go for him in the rules package. And that has him currently against the rules package tonight. I'm going to just lay it out straight for you guys. 5 or 1, it doesn't matter. 20 members of Congress proved last week that they can stop anything from being passed on the House floor. So I see it as a non-issue. I don't think it's anything for us to fight over. I think we need to celebrate the win. We have the gavel. I'm ready for investigations to start. I'm ready for subpoenas. And I'm ready to remove the drama basically out of the news and start putting results in the news for the American people.
So I just want to reinforce this, though. Gonzalez has said he's not going to vote for the rules package. Nancy Mace is flirting with the idea of not voting for the rules package. Some people in our audience say, Charlie, we should have taken this for weeks. We should have kept going months to try to get Kevin not to be speaker. Now, you could want that and you can wish that, but the composition of the House is that Kevin McCarthy had 150 to, 100, let's say, 100 moderates that weren't happy with any sort of conservative changes happening. And the moderates were getting ready to strike back. This is a good deal. It's been struck. We're ready to move forward. Can you just talk about how some of the moderates, more moderate members, Marjorie, have been, you know, not so happy that you're going to be on a committee. They're not so happy that, you know, these things are happening. Talk about that.
Yeah, let me give a little perspective for people that there's some things that a lot of people don't know. Last week was painful for some members of Congress, and I'll tell you why. the holding it out all week long. And I know some people just want to see nothing but full on fights here in Congress, but holding it out all week hurt a couple of people. Roger Williams' wife had a stroke and she was in the hospital. She's still in the hospital. He could not go home to be with her because the 20 kept holding out. Wesley Hunt, his wife had a baby 4 weeks early. The baby was in the hospital, still in the hospital. The wife, his wife and mother, she had to go to the hospital. So there were some very, Kevin Hearn's mother passed away. So there were some very personal things happening that the public had no idea about. And there were great frustrations that grew while there were basically backroom deals being struck that didn't have anything to do with rules packages. It had more to do about, hey, what committee assignments and things like that. That was what was going on. Now, I'm going to be honest with you again. I think we may have some moderates using this rules vote to their advantage to say, hey, I want this position. I want this committee assignment. And these are the things that I don't like, but they're happening. And again, Charlie, I'll tell everyone, I don't have any agreement. I have no committee assignments. I haven't had any. I still don't have any. I just want to do the job for the people. And I really want our 222 Republicans to get on board with this agenda. And this agenda is extremely America first. The agenda we have is for accountability. It's for investigations. It's for the border. It's to hold China accountable. It's to stop the woke sexualization of our children in education. I'm excited to pass my bill, the Protect Children's Innocence Act, to stop the gender mutilation of kids under 18. I'm excited to audit Ukraine, and I have an agreement with many, even moderates in the conference to do that, because I don't want any more money going to Ukraine. I'm sick and tired of
it. Yes, I care about completely.
I care about our border. So I want people to know that not just because someone calls themselves conservative or someone is a moderate, it doesn't mean that they're always right or they're always wrong. I want people to take personalities off the table. Let's just be about doing the job that we're elected to do. And that's what I'm imploring everyone in our conference to do. And that's what I'm asking our voters and the base and people that really care about MAGA and America First. Let's do that, because I'm tired of being the party of never. I want to be the party that fights the Democrats, defeats their radical ideology. And I want to be the party that actually proves to the American people that we're America first and we are for them all the way.
So there was a very interesting phone call that took place. And some of the holdouts in my were losing support amongst the people that I communicate with. So I was communicating with some great grassroots patriots, some big donors that were with some of the holdouts because they were getting some information about a blow up of some, you know, conversation, all that. But then they said, listen, if it's Friday evening and you're still voting for somebody that has no chance to be speaker, and my theory is on the 14th round of voting that there was a miscommunication, that somebody thought the threshold was something that it wasn't, and that this is my working theory, that they actually thought that it was going to pass. Is that correct, Marjorie? Because it didn't look like it was a triumphant thing. And then Kevin walks over to Matt Gaetz and they kind of have a somewhat of a heated conversation. And then Mike Rogers comes over and like lunges at Matt Gaetz and somebody has to pull him back. And in some ways, it was actually transparently real. Because that, okay, wow, this is not theatrics, but in some sense it actually kind of was. But then you started to make phone calls, and so is it true that you then called Donald Trump and started to try to pass the phone around to some of the holdouts? Walk us through that.
Yes, well, and you're so smart, Charlie. Wow, you great. You did a good job of breaking that down, and that is in fact what was happening. You know, I talked to President Trump very frequently. I will never back away from my loyalty to President Trump. I want him back in the White House. He's the only guy I'm supporting for 2024. And he is, in fact, the leader of the Republican Party. His early endorsement and support for Kevin McCarthy, it helped us hold the 201 Republicans supporting and voting for Kevin McCarthy the entire week. No one fell away. And President Trump had a big, big part and role into that. And the 20 that were holding out, never forget, These were all President Trump endorsed candidates. They have rode the MAGA train the entire time in their careers. Most of them have. And the new members, the new freshmen, they came in because of President Trump and his strong endorsement. President Trump had been calling them, telling everyone, let's get this over with. Let's get our job. Let's get the gavel and let's hold the Biden administration accountable. And I'd been talking to him earlier, so I called him up and I said, President Trump, we need your help. It just fell apart again on the 14th ballot, and he wanted to talk to Matt Rosendale. And so I said, great, I'm going to find him. I'll get him on the phone for you. And I found Matt Rosendale. Yeah, he was right across the aisle. And I said, Matt, President Trump wants to talk with you. Can you please talk with President Trump? Matt Rosendale blew up, yelled at me and screamed at me. Don't you ever do that to me, Marjorie. Don't you ever do this. And he was throwing his hand up and refusing to talk to President Trump. But I'm telling you, that was key in everything that was happening. And it was also, I want you to know, that pressure within our conference of these poor members and their families and these terrible issues that were happening. And it was like, okay, enough. You've extracted enough, you know, your pound of flesh here. You've done it. Let's care about people. And President Trump is saying, get it done, get it over with. And it was President Trump, his phone calls and his words to members that I believe it was key in getting this thing across the line. And we have the gavel. This is something people need to celebrate. And this was a team effort with President Trump, many Republicans, and all the conversations and the negotiations. This, we should be celebrating today. No one should be mad anymore. We should be cheering because we are ready to roll. And I'm ready to go. I can't imagine anybody being upset about having the gavel and the control here in the House. Because we've been under Nancy Pelosi while she has been leading the effort and the legislation and the attacks on our country, our Constitution, and the American people. And she has been getting the job done for Joe Biden. Well, that ended on Friday night because we got the gavel. We won. And President Trump, his voice being there on the floor on the phone was just such a great, just a great thing for me to be a part of. And I'm so happy that everyone knew that that's who was on that phone Friday night.
Yeah, I think that that wins the Getty image of the pictures of the year so far. I mean, it very...
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very powerful in more ways than one. All right, I'm going to tell you guys about Balance in Nature. It's a terrific product. Look, new year, new you, right? Well, you guys need to make sure you get the fruits and veggies that you need to be able to get you off to a fresh start. Sourced from 31 whole fruits and veggies, you get maximum nutrition with their star product, fruits and veggies in a capsule. It's balanceinnature.com, promo code Charlie. It's a very convenient way for you to make that fresh start. They're a wonderful product, wonderful company. If you're thinking you're suddenly going to start buying and preparing fruits and veggies, which you have to do every other day or so, it might not happen. So go to balanceinnature.com, discount code Charlie. Getting proper fruits and veggies helps improve your immune system, helps improve your clarity of thought. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com. That is balanceinnature.com, sourced from 31 whole fruits and vegetables. You'll get maximum nutrition with their star product, fruits and veggies in a capsule. It's not just that you're not going to look, a lot of people say, I'm not going to follow through with my plan. Just take the capsules. It's so easy. Balanceinnature.com, discount code Charlie. Balanceofnature.com, discount code Charlie. Check it out right now. Marjorie, I'm going to ask you a question we got from a listener that's a little bit critical. I'm sure you can handle it. Charlie, I listen live every day. You just did an interview with MTG. The 20 holdouts just delivered the most conservative Congress in my lifetime. And MTG was not one of the ones fighting for her. Why didn't you challenge her? Well, I'm reading the email. What's your response?
My record speaks for itself. I have a 100 Liberty score from Conservative Review. That's my actions. That's my voting record. And I'd like to remind everyone listening that the whole reason why we have Congress on record in the 117th Congress is because I led the effort demanding recorded votes on the House floor, not letting any bills pass by voice. All of my legislation that I've introduced is America First. All of my votes are America First and for the MAGA agenda. So I'm going to let my actions continue to speak for themselves. And the reason why I didn't engage in holding out to Kevin McCarthy is because the rules package was already there before we started voting on Monday. I didn't make this about a personality. I don't like the Never Trump movement. I don't like the Never movement in our party. I want to see real action done, and we can do that with our voting cards. So for this listener, I really do appreciate her question, but we have the power of our voting cards, and we have to get to 218 on every single bill passed. With 222 members of Congress, the one great thing you saw last week from my 20 friends and colleagues in the House Freedom Caucus, and by the way, I'm a member of the House Freedom Caucus, is that we can stop anything from passing and we can continue to make sure bills are exactly where they need to be. I'll continue to be part of that effort, and people can just continue to know I haven't changed, and they'll see that for themselves coming up.
So what committee, Marjorie, are you going to be on so we can have you release the dogs on all these treacherous cockroaches?
Well, I don't know. Again, I never demanded, or I don't have a deal. So I'm going to have to go through the steering assignments and the steering committee to get my committee assignments, just like every single member of Congress should be doing. I wasn't in backroom deals. I wasn't trying to negotiate anything for myself last week. I'm just very on board for our agenda. And that agenda has been on Kevin McCarthy's website for months. And that agenda is something I really believe in. I encourage everyone to go look at it. There's a lot there, and it was there for months. It didn't just happen last week. I want to point something else out, though, for everyone listening. Congress hasn't been changed forever. That did not happen last week. Every single 2 years, the new Congress votes on a new rules package. And so the big battle that happened last week, all of that could change the very next Congress when we vote on a new rules package. So again, for me, the only thing I can do is continue to be honest with everyone. And I told everyone up front, here's what I'm doing and why. And I'll just continue to do that. So, you know, I just also need to remind everyone, while people are mad at me, President Trump endorsed and supported Kevin McCarthy. Jim Jordan endorsed, supported, voted for, and nominated Kevin McCarthy. Over half of the Freedom Caucus voted and supported Kevin McCarthy. And, you know, the majority of our conference did. And guess what? Our entire conference elected him on Friday. So people that are, you know, overly mad at me, I shouldn't be your punching bag. Be very clear-eyed about what this is, and I'll continue to prove exactly who I am through my actions and not my words and emails, social media posts, and interviews on television.
Yeah, and I'm the first one to say that, look, I was skeptical, and this is my perspective, and I don't know if you share it, Marjorie. I was skeptical of the strategy, and I know all the personal, you know, with Wesley Hunt and with Troy Nels and all of that. But I will say I'm pleased if some of these concessions come to fruition. I'm pleased with them, especially the one on the Church and Pike Committee. I think that is just fabulous, and also the promise not to spend in open primaries. Marjorie, thank you so much, and can't wait to see. Go ahead, really quick.
Charlie, it's a fact that Kevin McCarthy was already planning the Church Committee, and he announced it before last week. So again, people are taking credit for making things happen last week that were already happening. And people can look that up. You can look it up. Look up when Kevin McCarthy announced the Church Committee. And I know for a fact he'd been talking about it for months. But I agree with you. The Church Committee is going to be huge. But the negotiations and the fight on the floor, they can't take credit for all of these things. And I think that's dishonest to do so. But I am happy with some of it. I'm happy for 12 separate appropriation bills. I hate the omnibus bills. I don't think we should ever have any bills.
But
yeah, so there are some wins.
MTG, okay. Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie. I appreciate it.
I want to tell you guys about COVID Tax Relief. COVID Tax Relief is an amazing service that exists for you because of Washington, D.C.'s addiction to overspending. Again, I'm not a fan that this money exists, or that's out there or that it's available. But it, as they say, it is what it is. Look, COVIDtaxrelief.org got a small retail business almost $80,000. COVIDtaxrelief.org got a manufacturing business, nearly $250,000. COVIDtaxrelief.org got a large distribution business, almost $900,000. If you run a business, church, or nonprofit and paid your employees through all or part of the pandemic, you could qualify for up to $26,000 per employee through the Government CARES Act. COVIDtaxrelief.org receives a low commission, very reasonable, only after you receive the money. So go to COVIDtaxrelief.org. That is COVIDtaxrelief.org. COVIDtaxrelief.org. Check it out right now. COVIDtaxrelief.org. Joining us now is one of my favorite guests. He is very smart, as he is entertaining, Daniel Horowitz. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be with you. Certainly entertaining times, if nothing else.
That's correct. So there's a lot of topics I want to cover with you. Let's first get your unfiltered thoughts. Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, your take.
Why did it take 40 years to do this? Why did it take so long? Until now, the thought is that conservatives should remain potted plants in whatever body they are, which typically is, depending on where you are, 10 to 30% of the GOP conference, be it a state legislature, be it Congress, and, you know, the higher the body. So if it's a Senate, there's an even smaller percentage of conservatives. And they have conference votes. Should we read the bill for 72 hours? Should we be able to offer amendments? No, and they'll lose, you know, a ratio of 5 to 1, 4 to 1. And then we go on doing our things. But this was the first time that there was a recognition from 20 members that we are the majority of the party. Now, the reason why they compose such a small percentage of the body is because these guys lie to get elected. They get the industry money, they use the industry money to run on our views, and then they get in there and they lie. So, you know, what I think this is saying is that, look, until you guys could run on what Tom Cole and Kay Granger and Mike Simpson and Fred Upton say privately about us, in a primary and win, then we'll respect your majority. But otherwise, are going to lie down on the tracks.
That's right.
And hostage taking is a good thing, because we're not talking about physically hostage taking. We're talking about debate. We're talking about creating inflection points, brinkmanship, in order to say we will not take it anymore. And, you know, look, this doesn't change the fundamentals that obviously – the federal government, in my view, is irremediably broken. We need to focus on making red states red again. But, Charlie, what do we need to do? We need to inform people. It's a messaging war. We need to red pill people. And we need to take the loincloth away from the GOP establishment so we force a convert or die moment. What this does is it gives us the tools to do all of that. It gives us the tools to force votes, to force oversight that they're too embarrassed to do on their own. And that will hopefully create some of these inflection moments that we're hoping for, that will red pill the people, red pill Republican voters. And that's kind of my big picture view of what all those concessions accomplished.
And I think those were successes. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think on a scale from 1 to 10, this rebellion was at least a 9.
And that's,
I really do.
I agree. And I was skeptical. Let me tell you why I was skeptical, because the conservative base has not proven strategically prior to know how to navigate a negotiation, right? Daniel, you've been through the debt ceiling stuff. You've been through, I mean, for years, it seems as if we always ask for the order and then we capitulate, or we go too far and we push it. I have to give them credit. I was skeptical of their ability to navigate. This was my perspective. People accused me of being pro-McCarthy. I said, no. I don't have faith in the ability of the Freedom Caucus to pull off a high-stakes deal. And they proved me wrong in that sense.
That is what is so significant. That is what I think we're all proud of, is that we now have a blueprint for how to deal with the GOP establishment. I was involved in all 3 Boehner coups. And yes, you know, on the first 2, this was the big problem. I mean, they back then they needed, I believe in 2013, 15, because they had a larger majority. They needed 15 votes. They had 20 names signed in a blood oath. Okay. And they peeled off one by one. They got peeled off. I think they got left with 8 or 9 in the end holding the bag. And this was always the problem. So I think now everyone knows going forward, they mean business, and that you'll always have a critical mass to do the surgery when the surgery needs to be done, and then other people can join. The problem is it's kind of like a hostage situation on an airplane. You have three hijackers. Well, you know, there's 100 passengers. You could overtake them, but no one knows who's going to join with him at that critical moment. And this is where we really, really had that in place. But I will say, it is thanks to people like Andy Biggs, Matt Gaetz, these people that lie down on the tracks and they took it to the next level. They didn't just say, hey, could we get some reforms here? No, they made it clear, we're never voting for you. And what that did is, because McCarthy badly, badly wanted this, that enabled them to create this degree of leverage they wouldn't have had it. If Charlie, you know, I was dealing with this several months ago. Back in August is when the Freedom Caucus asked for these rules changes. And it's funny, now everyone's like, yeah, that's obvious. Well, it wasn't obvious, and it got voted down very, very quickly, and it was like talk to the hand. It wasn't until they won a narrow majority and these guys said, hey, we're going to deny you the votes, that suddenly the floodgates of concessions opened up. And this is what they need to take on to state legislative bodies where, you know, you'll have 10, 15 conservatives and leadership sells them out on everything. You have to be willing to do things that are uncomfortable, potentially messy or whatever. Otherwise, you're going to suffer the entire rest of the session with a milquetoast agenda.
So, and I do also want to compliment them on how they ended it, because they could have kept this going over the weekend, but the moderates were getting ready to strike back. They had a clear idea of what success looked like, and they were willing to take a win.
Yeah, no, that's right. But I would just say they did it on their timeline. It wasn't because they finally gave in to the pressure. It wasn't the pressure. It was just what they got was worth taking. It was from a position of strength.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that it could, as Alinsky would say, a tactic that goes on too long becomes a drag, right?
Yeah.
And so it very well could have, not even the pressure, it just wouldn't have been strategically wise to continue. I mean, what else are you going to ask for?
Well, also, part of the thing strategically, too, is the way I view it is, first of all, again, you had to make it clear that McCarthy was unacceptable. If you didn't make it clear you were serious, you wouldn't have gotten those concessions. That's number one. But number two is, and this is important, so part of it is kind of like when I was a kid, I was wondering, why didn't we take out Saddam Hussein? That was so stupid. And then, you know, when the ensuing decade came and we had the whole Iraq business with the Sunnis and the Shias, I was like, oh, that's why we didn't do it. So I think you had to first pick the fight, had to go over that deadline, and had to assess. And they were able to assess what the best play was. And ultimately, you know, what I was saying, the reason why I supported it is because we could have gotten someone else. This notion that he was the only one is absurd. But I do think what ultimately would have happened if you would have gotten someone else is it was never going to be someone like us. So it would have been someone who on paper was slightly better, you know, like a respected, serious conservative. But, you know, then you would have less leverage over that guy, but
that's
he wouldn't
right.
exactly be where you are. This is kind of like Kevin is so soulless and he just wanted that gavel. It created a unique circumstance
yes,
where he didn't care
well
and he was willing to give them what
that's
they wanted.
Right. And Paul Ryan never would have put up with this. As you, Boehner had a lot of power, and he was willing to use it. And conservatives made a deal back in 2015 that turned out to be actually a bad deal. They went and made a deal with Paul Ryan thinking he was more conservative. Here's the lesson. If you're trying
to toss an interception.
Yeah, when you have a fork in the road between ideological and an ambitious person, go do a deal with the ambitious person because they really want power and they're willing to give you what you want. Daniel, 1 minute remaining.
People like McConnell and Paul Ryan, they believe it's a religious duty to keep people like, you know, Thomas Massie and Chip
yes.
Roy away from the Rules Committee, away from,
that's
you know,
correct.
This
it's part
of
their catechism.
Of
it really is. Yes.
That's what it is. McCarthy is like, hey, you know, dude, I just want that picture of me. And
but
they
that's
knew
fine.
How to
I can deal
that.
With that. I mean, that's not yes. I, the morals of that aside. OK, that's
exactly.
But that's not ideological, meaning they're
it
willing
was a pragmatic move.
They're willing to give in to those of us that want to see actual structural changes more so than Paul Ryan, who actually from a technocratic point of view wants to go turn Ukraine into the 51st state. Daniel, unfortunately, another athlete has collapsed. This was in a college basketball game. I don't know when it happened. I think it happened over the weekend. Is that correct? Yeah, let's play cut 26. I think they walked through it. Play cut 26.
Of their game today, keep your eyes on number 3, right side of your screen. That's Emo Isian. Sophomore guard stops, then slowly goes down to the ground. Players from both teams visibly upset after watching. Take a look. Number of ODU players were seen crying, looking on, and hoping their teammate was okay.
Daniel, I tweeted something rather vague after the collapse of Damar Hamlin, where I said this is a tragic pattern that we're seeing of athletes suddenly collapsing. I did not say anything about the vaccine. People said I inferred it. I'm just noticing a pattern. How should we think about this, Daniel?
You know, this is not about a statistic of a number of one, an N equals one survey. This is, first of all, there's been over 1,600 of these documented since 2021, but it's more than that. It's VAERS. It's VSafe. It's over 2,700 case studies on vaccine injuries. About 1,500 academic studies on vaccine injury. It's the insurance data, medical billing, all the surveys we have. Now, Rasmussen has, it's all of the preponderance of evidence, understanding the mechanism of action, the autopsies in Germany that were done on those with heart ailments, and they found the spike all over the place. You know, I was just looking, this just came out last week, the American Heart Association's journal Circulation, that's their academic journal, they found in those that had myocarditis and children that were diagnosed with it, a month after the shot, there were 436 billion copies of spike protein circulating freely in their plasma. So we know this is happening. Now, you could have one instance where it's a 1 in a million chance that he gets hit in the chest, and maybe it's that triggered it, maybe. But you can't put it all together and say this is not happening. And therefore, it is legitimate because it's happening for people to start questioning when they see it in front of their eyes that, yes, maybe this is the spike. But it's a little bit bizarre to me, Charlie. This is not even issue number 10 or 20 or on the map at all on the GOP agenda. I mean, I think there's a lot of talk about the FBI and going after them and the woke and weaponized agencies. And that's good. It's very good. But the whole COVID thing is muted. And the thing is, it would be bad enough if this happened in retrospect and it's over with and we're kind of like letting it go. And that would be bad enough. But this is a live ball in play, no pun intended. You have so many people that are ticking time bombs, and we need to study how to diagnose this and how to treat it, how to get ahead of this so we don't have more people dropping. And certainly eventually hold the people accountable for doing this. And then policy-wise, making sure that these mRNAs don't happen again, even though they're coming out with an RSV mRNA shot as early as this fall.
The crime of noticing. Talk about that, Daniel. You're not even allowed to talk about it. In fact, they will come after you with everything they have if you dare notice a pattern.
Well, because you can't deny the evidence. So the only thing you can do is ensure people don't see it. And obviously, data is data, but pictures and videos and stories are much more powerful. The imagery of it is much more powerful than all those, you know, thousands of studies and data points we pass around every day that doesn't seem to have any effect. But I think it is the crime of noticing. But again, you need the power of a unified movement or party to bring it to the forefront, to create an inflection moment that it will force change. And unfortunately, I don't think we're there yet, although the deal that was made on the structure of the House will make it easier for just a handful of people to raise and elevate the prominence of this issue.
It's an amazing thing. And Daniel, I mean, we live in a pharma-captured society and a pharma-captured politics right now. I'm going to be pushing for this new Congress to have some focus, some emphasis on investigating Pfizer, AstraZeneca, not just Fauci, but we need to go after the vaccine companies and the pharmaceutical companies themselves. And I know that there are some people willing. I know that. So yes. They're not a majority, but I know that there are some people willing in this new Congress that would go about this enthusiastically and would find some answers. Daniel, we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you.
Great. Come back soon. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.